All right, hour number two, as I come to you from Philly, Doug is in Sacramento. We've got Monday Night Football coming up for you in an hour, and we have the outstanding Charles Davis from the NFL on Fox. He and Kevin Burkhart were there firsthand to witness the beatdown that was the Rams over the Seahawks. Charles, man, oh, man, great to have you. I know it's been almost 24 hours. It's actually been past 24 hours. Can you still believe what you witnessed yesterday?
Really, the answer is no. Because even though you suspect that one team is better than the other going into a game, as I told a Seattle Seahawks official before the game, and he said to me, he pulled me aside and said, "What do you think?" And I said, "I think you're in trouble today." And he said, "Oh, I totally agree. We're gassed." So I knew, you know, my suspicion then was really because this is someone very close to the team, of course. And then I told him, I said, here's the one thing, though. I said, no matter how you look wounded from the outside, you're still Seattle, and everyone approaches you with a little bit of caution because you're still Seattle. I said, just 2 weeks ago, you took out Philadelphia. That still reverberates, okay? But I think you're in trouble today. And he said, I totally agree. He said, I hope we can have one of those monumental efforts, but you know, each time we're asking these guys to do this, you're really asking the wrong guys because the guys that would get it done, they're not in uniform. Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman, Cliff Averill, Bobby Wagner played on essentially one leg. You know, I mean, they are nothing like the Seahawks we've seen before. And I'm going to just tell you guys, I hope this doesn't sound overly dramatic because I don't want it to be, but I do believe that next year when you take to keep this year's roster – and look at next year's roster, and I think it'll be drastically different. And I think you will see some guys who are very recognizable for the Seahawks no longer with the organization. That's just my prediction.
Charles.
I think that window closed, Doug.
Yeah, you know, I would agree with you.
They tried to get there.
Yeah.
They tried there. You know, look, Sheldon Richardson was the trade, right?
Yeah.
The tackle.
Yep.
They traded for Dwayne Brown at left tackle.
Right.
They tried to keep that window propped open. And I feel bad because I'm spending all this time on Seattle. I really should be praising Los Angeles. Because L.A. came in. You know what they said, Doug? I mean, I felt it, but they articulated. They said, you know, we're not saying this publicly because it sounds like sour grapes, but we gave them the game that they beat us. We turned it over five times. We went up and down the field on them, doubled them in statistics. They took the ball away. Give them credit.
Yeah.
But to a person, head coach on down, they said, "Oh, that's not happening this time."
You know,
and we saw the results.
You know, Charles, to your point, let's speak to the Rams a little bit. And special teams, absolutely a dominant. I mean, have you seen anything like this when you look at the Rams special team unit?
Yeah, and you know, I'm glad you brought that up because I did a lousy job yesterday of not making a point that I should have. It's easy to praise the special teams that are the dramatic ones because we saw Farrell Cooper make all those great returns yesterday.
Right. Yep.
All right, that was wonderful. Okay, wow, look at the special teams of the Rams. Look what they're doing. What I did a lousy job of was saying, do you see how they're covering
woof
kicks? Because every time Tyler Lockett brought it out from on a kickoff return,
nothing.
He's not getting back to the 25.
Not a chance.
Which is the starting point now. When we were kids, it was the 20, the 25. Now, if you keep it in the end zone, that's where you start.
Yep.
He's not getting anywhere close to that. He's getting tattooed. Punt returns. He's trying to make something happen. He's getting clobbered.
Yes.
Their starting field position was, you know, at one point, I think we popped it up on the screen. L.A., I think into the second quarter, they had started all their possessions average of the Seattle 31-yard line.
Wow.
And Seattle's starting possessions were at the Los Angeles 21.
Ugh.
So you're talking about a major shift in that. I mean, I remember when Seattle first ran plays. I mean, the first time they took over on defense and L.A. was back in their own territory. I remember punching into the truck going, "It's the first time they've been over midfield, right?" And they're like, "Yeah."
Unbelievable.
And I think it was 13-0 at that point. And remember, L.A. took over. Ended up with a fourth and short and overthought it instead of just handing it to Gurley and getting it. And they tried a pass, and it got picked off. And that was like Seattle's last gasp. It was like, oh, they held on. And then, you know, four or five plays later, L.A.'s got the ball again, And they take it down and stick it in the end zone. Like, yeah, we should have done this last time. And the route was effectively at that point absolutely on. Even though, look, we went to break at one point, Grant and Doug. You guys know this, having played, you know, Grant, I mean, Doug is a player. Grant is a broadcaster. You just know some of those days and nights when you're watching and just like, this is not gonna get better. It was 6-0 we went to break. LA kicked their second field goal. And our whole truck, me, Kevin, Pam, I think we all said, do you know how lucky we are? It's only 6.
Right.
And it's only going to get worse. And it did. And wow, it was just unfortunate. It's just so hard to watch Seattle and think to yourself that this is happening to the Seattle Seahawks. It just, it almost was, for that very overused word, and I'm going to use it again, it was almost surreal.
We're talking with Charles Davis, the NFL on Fox. Everybody talking about the Pittsburgh-New England finish. And I get it. The NFL is trying to take the gray area out of what is a catch. And I understand why they're doing it. But I also understand that 99.9% of players, coaches, and fans hate the rule. Okay?
Yeah.
But the way the rule is written, that's an incomplete catch. Agree?
Yeah. You nailed it, Grant. You absolutely positively nailed it. I think we've talked about this before. If you're sitting around with 100 friends watching the game, was that a touchdown?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
I mean,
we're not really hesitating, right? Like,
nope.
That's a touchdown.
Yep.
Right? And Grant, you felt the same way, I assume?
Well,
I mean, it's a touchdown. Dez Bryant against Green Bay in the playoffs?
Yep. That's a catch.
Catch.
Yep. Right.
He even made an extra move, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to get to the end. And I'm still so proud of my teammate at Tennessee, Terry Brown, who was officiating on that play, because Terry let it play out. He didn't rule incomplete. He ruled catch down at that point because that's good officiating. You let replay overrule you. Because if you rule it incomplete, now you've made the burden of proof. You made the standard even harder for them to overturn it, okay? Because it's supposed to be what the call is on the field. But he made that call because if he had said incomplete, there's no way they turn that around and say it's a catch. But if he ruled it a catch, well, if they want to rule it incomplete, that's entirely up to them. But I just loved how he did that. And to everyone watching, it was a catch. Calvin Johnson, which started this whole thing.
Against the Bears. Yeah.
Catch. Yeah. Touchdown. Yeah. I mean, no one even hesitates or shrugs on it. And that's the hardest part for all of us. I mean, Dean Blandino, Mike Pereira, they do a great job for us. I tell them all the time, I said, this is where you earn your money because you've got to somehow find a way to be convincing that it's not a catch. And by letter of the law, and as you pointed out, Grant, they tried to take the gray area out. Actually, I think this is going to sound like I'm an old curmudgeon.
Uh-oh.
But I think part of the appeal of sports is the gray area. Mm. It does give us the discussion down the road. I know we want to get it right all the time. I get that. Look, Mike Barber, the Houston Oilers receiver, right? Was it Mike Barber or Renfro? Renfro.
Mike Renfro.
Renfro, right? Barber was the tight end.
Yep.
Mike Renfro is still saying, what about that catch I made against Pittsburgh, which kind of led us to where we are today? Because there was no replay then.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that was a playoff game. And remember Houston? That was the old Bum Phillips, love you, Blue. Remember they got beat in the playoffs and the crowd met them at the airport. Remember Bum gave that great speech. This year we knocked on the door. Next year we're kicking it down. Right?
Right.
And they never could get over on Pittsburgh. But if that call's ruled a certain way, maybe they did get over on Pittsburgh. And that's what led us to where we are now. But I do know that those games become lore. And while the fans may hate it, it also is part of the heavy debate and part of the part of, you know, the history of the game that we debate forever. That was a catch. Okay, fine. They rule it no catch, letter of the law. I get it. Okay, I see it. He didn't survive going to the ground. What kind of bailed everyone out, in a sense, was Pittsburgh not being real smart on that fake spike play.
Boy, no kidding.
Because we can fight it out about the catch and this, that, and everything. But ultimately, I heard people on my airplane before I got in the plane last night in Seattle. And I forget, there was a woman sitting up about 3 rows in front of me. Now, this is a red eye coming out of Seattle, leaving at 1 a.m. Pacific time. And I just heard her say to her seatmate, Pittsburgh, what were they thinking with that play? And, you know, to me, it kind of summed it, it kind of encapsulated it. Not that it shouldn't have been a touchdown. But my goodness, what were you guys doing? I mean, that just didn't make any sense. And people are still struggling with that one.
I was worried about you. I didn't even want to bother you with everything that was going on in Atlanta. And I know that you're probably on that airline. And I'm thinking, gosh, can you go from Seattle to Orlando nonstop, or would you have to go through Atlanta? Did you have any problems getting home?
I was supposed to go through Atlanta. That all changed. Fortunately enough, our travel department did a fantastic job. I switched and went through Charlotte.
Oh, okay. Good for you.
And got through Charlotte and got home a little bit later than normal.
Okay. Hey, but you know what? I was thinking about you because I was thinking, I really was. I was like, oh my gosh. Because, you know, I'm like, gosh, Charles is gone. I guarantee you Charles is on Delta. I guarantee you that, you know, right. I know. So anyway, I don't want to get sidetracked.
I was on Delta and I got switched to America. But thank God I was not in Atlanta at the airport when it all went down.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
I heard that the darn near went Lord of the Flies there.
Yeah. Charles. You know what? You just said something that really hit with me, and I don't want to switch to another sport, but it's why I'm so against automated balls and strikes because of that gray area that you're just talking about. To me, that's the beauty of baseball, and I'm with you. See, to me, I always talk about, and Doug and I talk about this all the time, and I'm really big on this. I'm big on the term common sense. You know, our officials aren't dumb, all right? Let them use common sense on sometimes what is a catch and what isn't. And I'm just wondering, and I know that the NFL is going to go, no, we can't have common sense. It's got to be black and white. But you know what I'm saying, right, Charles?
Yeah, it's hard to make black and white with human foibles.
Right. Yep.
It's just really difficult to do, and I know they're trying their best. How'd you like to be on the competition committee, Doug?
Oh, boy.
You think all the people on the competition committee right now are thinking, how do I gracefully get off
before this hits the fan, right?
Because we're right back having that same discussion we've been having for multiple years now. What is a catch? Because remember, we redefined it, 2 years ago?
Yes.
Right, with the new set of standards, and now we're right back to where we were again.
Terrible.
And you know it's going to be a big topic, so everybody who's on is going to have to deal with it. But we all do that, and truthfully, in every sport, we go back to calls made, not made, this, that, and everything. And yes, we all want them to be correct. We all want them to be right. But to me, and again, I'm going to sound like I'm 1,000 years old, it's humans playing the game. It's humans officiating the game. We got to make sure that we keep that element in there. And by the way, automated balls and strikes, a chip in the football, don't forget, it's still humans programming everything.
Hey.
So there's still some error in there.
Kind of common denominator. And when we talk about committees and all of that, I just last night, Raiders, Cowboys, I don't even know what a first down is anymore, Charles. Have you ever seen anything like a, what was that, Grant? Was that a cue card? I don't know what the heck he tried to slide in there.
I'm guessing he pulled out the index card that he uses for different penalties.
Okay.
He has to note for ejections. You know, a soccer referee, you know, they pull that stuff out for red cards, yellow cards. You have to write that kind of thing down. I don't know exactly what was on there. Heck, it might have been Gene's grocery list. I don't know. Okay.
Right.
But I will say this, for as weird an optic that was watching that, I actually walked away with admiration for Gene for taking that shot and making sure and saying, listen, I'm going to show you why I'm making this call the way I am. And I know Jack Del Rio is still understandably upset. Like, what the heck was that? But I think what Gene was trying to do at the end was, this is so darn close. I want everyone to see exactly why I'm about to signal first down.
Yeah.
And here it is. So to me.
Yep. It's a good point.
He had a pretty good set on him.
I didn't even think about that.
That said, I'm going to put myself out there and do this. Now, here's the thing about Gene Steratore. He has built up a reservoir of big-time officiating, Super Bowls.
Yeah, he's great.
Big-time championship games.
Yep.
College basketball, where he's going to – I think Gene's worked Final Four of college basketball, if I'm not mistaken. I may be wrong on that. But he is acknowledged as a big-time official in both sports. And for him to step out there and chest it up and get it done, he doesn't look like Hockey Lee, but he has a terrific command of a football game. And, you know, our crew, you know, we rate officials. Like, we look and see who we have for an officiating a game, and some games you're like, oh, no. And some games you're like, oh, yes. And Steratore is very much an oh, yes.
Charles, you've got another big game coming up on Sunday. It's that time of year, and the Falcons obviously playing tonight, so you'll get a chance to you know, scout them in this game before you do all the rest of your work for the Saints and the Falcons. They just played 2 weeks ago, which is crazy to me that, you know, division rivals are playing twice in the month of December in this close proximity, but it is what it is. So this game coming up, I mean, Saints, Falcons, Breeze against a disappointing Falcons team this year, this is going to be a heck of a game because the loser is probably going to be done.
Yeah, and that's the weird part, isn't it? Because the Saints have kind of set an excellent pace. They're 10-4. But the Falcons actually control their own fate.
Yep.
If Falcons win out, win these three, and they win the division, which sounds incomprehensible, doesn't it?
It sure does. Like, it's crazy.
What? Hey, they do what? But they do. And it's a very – I mean, this division is a monster. To me, there's almost no justice unless Carolina, Atlanta, and New Orleans all get in.
Mm-hmm.
Because that division's been that kind of division this year. Atlanta would be the one that you might have a little bit of an arched eyebrow because they just, based on the standard they set last year, they haven't been close to it. But they're hanging in there. They found a way to beat New Orleans last week at home. And when you said what you said, Grant, it triggered something for me because, and Doug, you've gotten used to this now. Grant and I are always going to find a way to get our New York in there.
I know it.
And Doug doesn't even – you don't even bat an eye anymore.
No.
You're kind of like, here it comes.
Yes, sir.
Grant, tell me if I'm wrong, but when Chuck Bednarik hit Frank Gifford,
mm-hmm.
didn't the Giants and Eagles play somewhere close to a back-to-back?
You know, honestly, you got me on that one.
I need to do some research.
Yeah,
I feel like they were very close, either just like this, where it was a week ago, and then they played someone, then they played again. I felt like it was almost like a back to back, and I don't know if it was a back to back because of regular season, then you have a playoff game.
Right.
But I think that's what happened.
Man, you got me on that one.
They ended up playing, and ended up in a tie. And they had to have a one-game playoff to break the tie because that's how they did things back then.
That's right.
Result, Eastern Conference, Western
that's
Conference.
That's right.
It wasn't like the playoffs now. And I think that was when the Eagles went on. But you don't have this very often, especially this late in the season. You play, they play someone else, you're going to play again. So this is going to be an interesting deal. But Atlanta, truthfully, absolutely has to have this game. If they do, they're still in the hunt. If not, they put themselves major league behind the eight ball.
Yep.
And they got some help yesterday because Green Bay got beat. And Atlanta has tiebreakers. And the best part for Atlanta, they have tiebreakers against a number of their competitors. Because, if Seattle had won yesterday, Atlanta had the tiebreaker against Seattle because they went there and beat them. So they're in a good spot, but they're going to have to take care of business and win out.
Charles, let's assume that three teams from the NFC South make it, Saints, Panthers, and Falcons. Lions, Seahawks, or Cowboys. Who do you think gets in?
Cowboys.
Really?
Yeah, because they've got the Seahawks at home this week. And, all week the narrative is going to be, is Seattle going to play at all?
Right.
Or did we see the last gasp?
Gotcha.
Already. So we'll see. And don't forget the Cowboys get who back this
Ezekiel
week?
Ezekiel Elliott.
And the Cowboys have won their last two without
yes,
him.
Right.
Sean Lee's back in the lineup on defense. I like where their schedule sets up. Detroit, here's the problem with Detroit. I don't care what the schedule looks like, what it happens, you just don't feel it. I hate saying it that way. But you remember they were 9-4 last year.
Yep.
And lost their last three. And was there anyone who had any doubt in their mind? Remember they played Green Bay for the division title? On Sunday Night Football to finish the season?
Yep.
Was there anyone outside the most diehard Detroit fan who thought that Detroit was going to win that game?
No.
There was no one.
Nope, nobody.
And what happened? Green Bay went in and got it done. Yeah. So you just don't ever feel it. Now, remember, Detroit still got into the playoffs, but it wasn't going in the way you thought, and they did their normal 1-1 and done, and they were out. So I just, I hate to say it that way, but I just haven't – felt that way. Now go back to the beginning of the season and someone said to me, what about Jacksonville? I said, well, we've been talking about Jacksonville for how many years now? I'll wait until they prove it to me. Well, guess what? They did it. Detroit, I've kind of got in the same category. I'll wait till you actually prove it to me. Even though I see some sparks, I see some things, but I'm not a big believer in fourth quarter comebacks being sustainable over time, and that makes you a great team. That makes you a high wire, will lend a family act that eventually you're going to crash because there's no net. And that's what's happened to me, I think, a lot of time with Detroit.
Charles, Merry Christmas, buddy.
Merry Christmas to you guys as well. I hope that where are you guys for Christmas for the Kings?
We actually fly out Christmas evening to play L.A., but it's an hour flight.
So you're home.
Yeah. We have a home game the 23rd against the Spurs, and then we play in L.A. on the 26th. So not bad.
Oh, that's great. I'm happy to hear that for you guys. Because our game is Christmas Eve in New Orleans.
That's right.
And our crew does a fantastic job of not scheduling tight flights. I'm so proud of our crew because a lot of crews, you guys have been around.
Oh, yes.
Hey, can I get this tight? Hey. And then they spend the whole game worrying if they're going to catch their flight instead of doing their job.
Yep.
My crew doesn't do that, but it is Christmas Eve and there aren't a ton of flights. This is the first time we all had to take tight flights. So I know our guys have done a great job. They've arranged a police escort. We are.
There you go.
Hey, let me tell you something. If this goes to overtime,
you're in trouble.
Drew Brees and Matt Ryan's names won't be worth a nickel a pound. If they go to overtime, our guys are going to be hostile.
Hey, Charles.
Let's play this one in regulation, fellas.
Charles, can you tell Grant to get his Christmas shopping done before Christmas Eve, please?
Listen, Doug, I can't tell Grant anything. I haven't done mine.
Oh, no. Look at you.
Okay, so I can't be hypocritical. I'll put it to you this way, Doug. I'm going tomorrow.
There you go. Look at that, Grant.
That's my window.
There you go.
My window's tomorrow.
See, but you see, D.C., he works on Christmas Eve. He can't go on Christmas Eve this year. He's working. He's got a game. Come on, Doug.
So there's no excuse for Grant.
Doug, I used to be a Christmas Eve tour de force.
There you go. Oh, yeah, that was your deal, huh?
I would go on Christmas Eve.
Oh, yeah.
I had my hit list.
Yep.
And I'd be like, I'll take that, box it. I'll take that, wrap it. I'll take that, box it. I'll take that, wrap it. I'll be back in an hour to pick it all up.
There
go to the next
go.
Place. Box it, wrap it, do it. I'll be back in an hour to pick it up. And that would be my Christmas Eve.
Gosh, that brings back memories. Me and my brother and I heading out to Walt Whitman Mall in Huntington, New York every Christmas Eve for about 3 hours to get it all done. So
Get it done.
Whatever works, man. Hey, Charles, all the best to you and your family. Have a great holiday. Good call on Christmas Eve, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, the same to you guys, and everyone can hear our voices. I hope everybody's enjoying Hanukkah, and Merry Christmas to everyone because that is actually coming up. Take care now.
Yep, be good. That's Charles Davis. Good stuff as always. I'll tell you what Doug and I will do. We're going to take a timeout, and when we come back, we'll open up the phone lines at 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. This is Sports 1140 KHTK. All right, good stuff with Charles Davis, the NFL on Fox. Doug Martin is a healthy, inactive scratch for the game tonight for the Bucs. The Falcons, as Charles said, they control their own destiny. If they win out, they win the division. So they got a tough schedule. They should win tonight, though, and we'll have that game coming up for you at the top of the hour. We'll get you out to Tampa.
Grant, imagine the Falcons can win the division. It doesn't sound right with the way that they've played. They've just, and maybe just their under-delivering is kind of speaking to the fact that they got something there. They just haven't played well this year.
All right, here's the schedule. Again, Doug and I with about 20 minutes left, and then we will get you to Tampa. Tomorrow it's Kings basketball. Wednesday, Kings basketball. Then Doug and I back in studio Thursday and Friday. The Kings play on Saturday, and then they play the day after Christmas in L.A. against the Clippers. So we'll see. You know what? Again, it's about competing, and I did see that yesterday. I wasn't crazy about the way they played against Minnesota. And you and I have not really had a chance to talk about that game that was played against Minnesota because you were at your son's basketball tournament on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, I'm not impressed with Minnesota. And I'm going to tell you, Doug, I heard a lot of rumblings that were not good about Tom Thibodeau and the Timberwolves. Like, I don't think this is a long marriage in the making. I really don't.
It kind of looks that way, Grant, from the standpoint that I saw, I don't want to say it was an article or it was on Twitter, and it was speaking to Jamal Crawford saying that, I didn't sign up for this pretty much.
17 minutes a game.
Yeah, under 17 minutes a game. And, as a sixth man, the ability to play. He really, Grant, there was 4 minutes left in the game, and the decision was in the balance, and he had his starters in the game. I was thinking, what are you doing?
Yeah, well, and that's the way he coaches, and he doesn't care what anybody says. But, Jimmy Butler is aligned at the hip with Tom Thibodeau, and Gibson's pretty much on board. from what I'm hearing, he doesn't have the rest of that team that's going to go to war for him. And that's not a good situation. It really isn't.
Absolutely. It's going to come down to the stars of that team, really, to be honest with you. You got Jimmy. I understand that. But then when you talk about Cat and Andrew Wiggins, and those are the young guns that are going to be there for the long haul. And if he doesn't have them on board, that's going to be the tipping point, in my opinion, Grant.
That's exactly right. Now, here's the deal with Tom Thibodeau. He is the head coach, and he's also the president of basketball operations. So
yes,
he's got control of the basketball department. But I got to tell you, I don't see it's not all great in Timberwolves land. Let me just put it to you that way.
Yeah, you know, interestingly enough, I don't know if this is the absolute last person, but the last person that has had general manager and coach was Doc Rivers, and we've seen how that played. They relieved him of one duty, which was general manager, and now it looks to be a little rocky on the coaching front. So is that great? Yeah, it can be. And I want to say, what's the guy's name in Detroit? He had both for a second, I think.
Yeah, Stan Van Gundy.
And I don't think he does both of them. He just head coaches now. So it's something that's done, but Tibbs has to do something, because I still think they're under-delivering.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think they are. I was not that impressed with them. And then you know what? What happens? The two nights later, they lose at home to Phoenix.
Go figure. I mean, this is a Phoenix team without their best guy in Devin Booker. And we saw that Phoenix team, and the Kings beat that Phoenix team. And this is to go in and to be able to beat Andrew Wiggins, Karl Anthony Towns. You got a perfect guy in Taj Gibson. Jimmy Butler's another perfect fit. And then Jeff Teague. I mean, when I look at that starting five, you got some star power. You got guys who don't need the ball. You got guys who's been a double-time All-Star at the point guard position. And then you come in with the three-time sixth man of the year, and you still aren't figuring it out. I don't understand.
Yeah, all right. 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Philadelphia is in Chicago tonight. That game doesn't even start until 8 o'clock Eastern. So and then they lose an hour coming back. So it's going to be a late arrival for the 76ers after the game. Mm-hmm. And how about the Bulls? Hey, don't tell anyone, but they've won five in a row. Think about that for a minute.
Well, let me say something. We were wrong about – I was right initially about Chris Dunn. Then I was wrong when he got to Minnesota, because I'm thinking, man, this guy cannot play. But all of a sudden, he has gotten to Chicago. Maybe it is the way that Thibodeau coaches or whatever it is, because defensively he's solid. He's improved. His shot doesn't look as janky as it did last year. Yeah, five in a row. They got a little something happening.
Yeah, and they take on a Philadelphia team that's, you know, 500. How great was that game? You probably didn't get a chance to see it, but the game on Friday night with OKC and Philly, the triple overtime game, that was a dandy.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance. I just watched the highlights, Grant, but that is a high caliber of basketball. And then to watch Joel Embiid and Westbrook go back and forth, Embiid tells whoever was sticking him bye-bye as he fouled out, and then all of a sudden at the end of the game, Westbrook is saying the same thing, and just the chitter-chatter and competitiveness, I really like that. One heck of a game.
All right, so when you look at the Bulls now, they are 8-20, so they have vaulted up. You look at the Dallas Mavericks have 8 wins in the West, okay? The Grizzlies and the Kings have 9 wins, and in the East, Atlanta with 6 wins, Chicago with 8. So we'll be talking a lot about this after we get through the All-Star break, because for obvious reasons. But, you know, again, I want to see the Kings compete. I don't expect them to win tomorrow. They beat Philadelphia a couple of weeks ago. I'm not saying that they won't win. I'm not forecasting it. And then you take on a Brooklyn team, and you know, again, you go out and compete, get better every game. That's what I want to see from these young guys. I want to see Justin Jackson play. I want to see, you know, De'Aaron Fox after not playing a game. I want to see how he does tomorrow, you know, on the road in front of a packed house, you know, taking on a Philadelphia team. And I don't know how you match up with them. The Kings beat them when they were in Sacramento, but this is going to be a different environment tomorrow at Philadelphia.
You know, absolutely, Grant. And when I look at the Kings, 13th right now, you mentioned 9-20. And, you know, beginning the season with so many young players, and we still see it now as you develop and you try to figure out, you want to fast forward that development. You want them to be all in, live, eat, and sleep in the gym. But understand there's a 7-game losing streak there. The Kings are more competitive now. If they had that competitive edge during that 7-game winning streak, I mean losing streak, maybe add 2 or 3 wins on the end of that, and that vaults them to like the right behind the probably 10th seed, somewhere in there. Now, what I'm trying to say, Grant, is that's not saying, oh, you're going to be at the playoffs, but if this young team begins to get some steam, they can begin to start to formulate maybe something that you can look into the future and you can start to see, okay, this is the type of team that I really like to see. I like their competitive nature, and I like how they go after it.
Final segment when we return on Sports 1140. All right, we got time if you want to get in on the show. 339-1140, 800-920-1140. I picked the Falcons tonight. You were not with me when I made my picks on Friday. I'm sorry, but I did pick the Rams to beat your Seahawks, but I hope you're not going to like not never talk to me now, you know.
Come on, Grant. That, you know, I was wavering on that one because it looked like, you know, this is a Rams team, man, that I can see winning in the playoffs, Grant.
I could too.
I mean, offensively, they run the football, first of all. That means that if Goff isn't having a good game, you can take the ball out of his hands. But, you know, Gurley is highly productive.
Yes.
He catches the ball out of the backfield.
And Aaron Donald on the defense. Oh, my gosh.
Good
what a
Lord.
Freak.
Man, I see. You remember when he was holding out, Grant, and we're thinking, you know, what's going on? Now, I understand. Because, oh, my goodness, man, he's a grown man.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, he is a grown man. And let me tell you something. Whatever he's getting paid
is not enough.
Right. You know what? And whatever he got, well, good
not
for
enough,
him.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm just saying, if he got what he wanted, good for him, you know?
Man, that dude, man, he is they're believing. And you can see that McVay has them believing. And, you know, you talk about the defensive side of the football. And I want to say that Charles mentioned it during the game, but McVay brought the defense together and was talking to them, and he was letting everybody know, Charles, that, look, you got a defensive coordinator, but make no mistake about it. This is the coach of this team, and he was speaking to the defense in a way. And I want to say it was part of the time, Grant, when things were getting chippy, and he was kind of saying, look, we're here for business. The look on his face was, we're here for business. Don't get caught up in that.
All right, the world of the NFL, so unpredictable, and again, we go through this every single year. Two teams in each conference that people thought had a chance to compete for all the marbles, the Giants in the NFC and the Raiders in the AFC.
Yep.
The Giants are going to end up 2-14, and the Raiders are going to end up 6-10.
Wow.
That exactly. And I'm not using this for any other. With the Giants, at least they can look at all of their injuries, all right, and blame some of their awful play on that. The Raiders can't. The Raiders really can't. The Raiders have just been a underachieving football team this year, and we talk about teams that were bad last year, looked awful at the beginning of the year, and now look at the 49ers getting hot at the end of the year. And if you're a 49er fan, without knowing what's going to happen in the final 2 weeks, you probably can't wait for the season to start next year.
I'm telling you, 49ers fans should be bullish, and they have every right. When you look at that quarterback and you think about the ability to maybe add a couple pieces, obviously protect him on the offensive side of the football, on offensive line, and then defense continue to improve and get better. This is a team, I got to say, that's trending in the right direction in the NFC.
And then you have a team that just a month ago – people were saying Jacksonville's going to go out and get Eli Manning because they need a quarterback, okay?
Right.
Well, all of a sudden, Blake Bortles in the last 3 weeks looks like, you know, Joe Montana. You know what I'm saying? The guy has been unbelievable.
Great. I mean, he's like 2-3 weeks where he's throwing for 300
it's
plus.
Unbelievable.
And you're thinking, okay, he just needs to manage the team and not make mistakes. But it looks like that they've turned him loose a little bit, and they're allowing him to. This was, I think, what everyone had anticipated when he was drafted. Now, can he continue this? Now, if he goes into the playoffs, Grant, and shows well, because defensively, make no mistake, they are going to be absolutely solid. And, they didn't even have their star rookie running back yesterday. I mean, for God's sakes. And he was still able to deliver. Now, they were playing the Colts, but the point is they're getting wins at 10-4. They're looking good.
All right, so we got NFL football coming up in a couple of minutes. You've got the Falcons, huge game. They've got to win. They're at Tampa, and we got 2 weeks left in the season. The Raiders are in Philadelphia. The Niners are going to try to run the table here and head into the offseason with a great deal of confidence. But for the Raiders, again, I don't see them winning next week. I don't see them winning against the Chargers. And, boy, how about the Chargers getting manhandled in Kansas City, right? They got beat badly on Saturday night.
Look, Grant, that was a message by those Kansas City Chiefs. And they may have been slumping. Obviously not may have been. They were slumping after a 5-0 start. And then all of a sudden you're thinking, okay, what's going to happen in the AFC West? And that was the matchup. It was a chance for the Chargers to send a shot out and let everybody know. And the Chiefs came out and they played the type of football we've been expecting from them. So could this be the beginning of them starting to do something in the AFC? Because at the beginning of the season, Grant, everyone was thinking, okay, this is a team that might be able to knock off the Patriots. We'll see if they can continue.
I will say this about the Chiefs. All right, if they play defense and they fire and they are jumping around the football like they have the last 2 weeks, they're a different team. They went out and they got after it. And I'm thinking to myself, where was that defense for the previous 6 weeks?
Yeah.
But they were flying around the ball in the last two games.
Yeah, and the week before with the Raiders, we came in and you said, I think this may be the spark that you know, okay, they might be moving now. And I was like, okay, well, let's just be a little apprehensive here and hold on, Grant. And then watching what they did to the Chargers, I think you may have been right. Defensively, you're right. If they can be solid, because all the weapons on the offensive side of the ball, they can run it, they can throw it. You got a tight end, you got deep threats, you got speed. There's a lot of different things that they possess, but defensively, they have to be solid.
All right, so we've got that, and don't forget, tomorrow we've got Kings basketball. Then on Wednesday, the Kings are in Brooklyn. So, again, we've got a good matchup in importance. It's the Falcons and the Bucks. We're going to get you out to Tampa in just a moment. Doug, enjoy the rest of your day, and I guess I will talk to you on TV tomorrow, buddy.
You got it, man. Have a good night.
All right, we will be back for our full show on Thursday. Until then, Grant Neap here for Doug Christie. So long.